Hare Krishna. Second Canto, Chapter 4, Text 20. May Lord Sri Krishna, who is worshipable Lord of all devotees, the protector and glory of all the kings like Andaka and Vrishni of the Yadu dynasty, the husband of all goddesses of fortune, the director of the sacrifices and therefore the leader of all living entities, the controller of all intelligence, the proprietor of all planets, spiritual and material, and the supreme incarnation on earth, the supreme all in all, be merciful on us. And repeat. May Lord Sri Krishna, who is the worshipable Lord of all devotees, the protector and glory of all the kings, like Andaka and Vrishni of the Yadu dynasty, the husband of all goddesses of fortune, the director of all sacrifices, and therefore the leader of all living entities, the controller of all intelligence, the proprietor of all planets, spiritual and material, and the supreme incarnation on the earth, the supreme all in all, be merciful upon me. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Since Sukadeva Goswami is one of the prominent Gata Balikas who are freed from all misconceptions, he therefore expresses his own realized perception of Lord Sri Krishna as being the sum total of all perfection, the personality of Godhead. Everyone is seeking the favor of the goddess of fortune, but people do not know that Lord Sri Krishna is the beloved husband of the goddess of fortune. In the Brahma Samhita, it is said that the Lord, in his transcendental abode, Goloka Vrindavan, is accustomed to herding the Sarabi cows and is served there by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. All these goddesses of fortune are manifestations of his transcendental pleasure potency, Ladini Shakti, in his internal energy. And when the Lord manifested himself on this earth, he partially displayed the activities of his pleasure potency in his Rasa-lila, just to attract the conditioned souls, who are all after the phantasmagoria pleasure potency in degraded sex enjoyment. The pure devotees of the Lord, like Sukadeva Goswami, who was completely detached from the abominable sex life of the material world, discuss this act of the Lord's pleasure potency, certainly not in relation to sex, but to relish a transcendental taste inconceivable to the mundaners who are after sex life. Sex life in the mundane world is the root cause of being conditioned by the shackles of illusion, and certainly Sukadeva Goswami was never interested in the sex life of the mundane world. Nor does the manifestation of the Lord's pleasure potency have any connection with such degraded things. Lord Chaitanya was a strict sannyasi, so much so that he did not allow any woman to come near him, not even to bow down and offer respects. He never even heard the prayers of the Devi Dasis offered to the temple of Jagannath, because a sannyasi is forbidden to hear songs sung by the fair sex. Yet even in the rigid position of a sannyasi, he recommended the mode of worship preferred by the gopis of Vrindavan as the topmost loving service possible to be rendered to the Lord. And Srimati Radharani is the principal head of all such goddesses of fortune. Therefore, she is the pleasure counterpart of the Lord and is not different from Krishna. A very long purport. In the Vedic rituals, there are recommendations for performing different types of sacrifice in order to achieve the greatest benefit in life. Such benedictions as the results of performing great sacrifices are, after all, favors given by the goddess of fortune. And the Lord, being the husband or lover of the goddess of fortune, is factually the Lord of all sacrifices also. He is the final enjoyer of all kinds of yajna. Therefore, Yajnapati is another name of Lord Vishnu. It is recommended in the Bhagavad Gita that everything be done for the Yajnapati, Yajnartat, Karmana, For otherwise, one's acts will be the cause of conditioning by the law of material nature. Those who are not freed from the misconceptions, vyalikam, perform sacrifices to please minor demigods, but the devotees of the Lord know very well that Lord Sri Krishna is the supreme enjoyer of all performances of sacrifice. Therefore, they perform the Sankirtan Yajna, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.23, which is especially recommended in this age of Kali. In Kali Yuga, performance of other types of sacrifice is not feasible due to the insufficient arrangement and inefficient priesthood. That verse, Prahlad says, hearing and chanting about the transcendental glory, holy name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes of the Lord Vishnu, remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 types of paraphernalia, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming his servant, considering the Lord to be one's best friend, and surrendering everything unto him, in other words, serving him with body, mind, and words. These nine processes are accepted as pure devotional service. One who has dedicated his life to the service of Lord Krishna through these nine methods should be understood to be the most learned person, for he has acquired complete knowledge. That's what, when Hiranyakasipu was asking Prahlad what he learned, he told him that, and he got really mad. Wow. There's like a couple more pages. So should we read the whole thing, or? We have information from the Bhagavad Gita that Lord Brahma, after giving rebirth to the conditioned souls within the universe, instructed them to perform sacrifices and lead a prosperous life. With such sacrificial performances, the conditioned souls will never be in difficulty in keeping body and soul together. Ultimately, they can purify their existence. They will find natural promotion into spiritual existence, the real identity of the living being. A conditioned soul should never give up the practice of sacrifice, charity, and austerity in any circumstances. The aim of such sacrifices is to please the Yajnapati, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Lord is Prajapati. According to the Katha Upanishad, the One Lord is the leader of all the innumerable living entities. The living entities are maintained by the Lord, Eko Bahunam Yo Vididati Kama. The Lord is therefore called the Supreme Bhuta Brit, or maintainer of all living beings. Om Aganata Mirandasya Ganamina Shalakaya Chaksura Militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uttapada Kamala Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sajajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savarutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Ukam Karoti Vachalam Pangam Langayate Girim Tat Kripa Tamahambande Shri Gurun Dinatarane. Okay. Yesterday was the appearance day of Ganesh. Might have heard about it. So much came on the Facebook, but there was one interesting thing, if I can find it. Anyway, Krishna is the husband of the goddess of fortune. One time I was trying to distribute books in London, And it was a very rainy, cold day. I was very in a bad mood. I just thought it's too hellish, you know. But then I was trying anyway. Saw a few Indian people, because so many Indian people there took books. Then I started thinking, you know, I've got to find somebody besides Indians to take the book, you know, because they're naturally attractive. I saw one non-Indian, and so she was real nice, and she said, "Oh, I know Lakshmi, or I know the goddess of fortune." So I said, "Well, Krishna is the husband of the goddess of fortune." She immediately took Bhagavad Gita. Oh. So that's what this verse is mentioning, that Krishna is the husband of the goddess of fortune. So no need to worship Lakshmi separately from Krishna. That's not a good idea. That's like Ravana. He wanted Lakshmi without Krishna. He wanted Sita without Ram. But he would worship Krishna. Lakshmi is always there. Radha and Krishna, Radharani is Mahalakshmi. It's like Krishna is the source of all the Vishnus. Lakshmi, Radharani is the source of all the Lakshmis. So we have, you know, we have that. Now. When these things come up on, it's different, you know, the page it comes up on, these are different than the one it comes up on. Computer. There was a Ma Nidhi Swami, he had a class, you know, about Ganesh, so he was going over all the things that Ganesh, you know, he has his different weapons and so many things and what the meaning of them is. He has a chopper that's to cut off attachment. He gives. Most people worship Ganesh to get material opulence, so he gives it, but then, you know, he really wants to cut it off. He can remove obstacles. He removes obstacles, so the materialists ask him to remove obstacles for them to gain material opulence, because the material world itself is an obstacle, but the real thing is the obstacles to attaining devotional service is material things and the desires for material things and attachment to material things. So really he can help with that. Although Prabhupada, you know, he didn't. Some devotees were worshipping Ganesh, and someone asked if they could worship Ganesh. Prabhupada was not at all favorable. But he said, "If you can give $100,000 a month to my book fund, then you can worship Ganesh." So nobody started worshiping Ganesh. And he said that the spiritual master can also remove all the obstacles. Even better, it says, Sarvadeva Maya Guru, that the spiritual master is the sum total of all the demigods. So when he surrendered it, then we have no need to separately worship demigods. But we honor them because they're devotees. Yat pada palava yugam vinidaya kumbha dvande pranama samaye saganadi raja vignan vihanta malamasya jagatrayasya govinda maripusham tamaham bhajami. That he always keeps the lotus feet of the Lord on his head. Ganesh. So possible, but just like Shiva, it's possible to worship Shiva, he can give Krishna, but it's not recommended for us to do that. So we honor Shiva as a great acharya, founder of four main sampradayas. So one of them is Rudra, the Shiva sampradaya. And that's the real way to worship Shiva. But it's very rare that people worship Shiva. Like most of the Shiva worshippers, they're worshiping for material gain. So back to this verse, I can't find the whole detail here. So this Krishna is everything. Here just giving like bit by bit all the different things. The owner of all opulence. So he's the owner of everything then. And as much as we want to be the owner, want to think I am mine, this is mine, then as much as that desire is there, then as much we're not able to understand Krishna. Bhagavad Gita is saying nirahankara, nirmama, nirahankara. It's not, nothing is mine, and I'm not this body. That's a realization devotees have. We may have proprietorship over things, but it's not our, that it's ours. Krishna gives us responsibility. Whether it's some devotees may have big businesses. Hopefully some devotee will be, you know, leaders of countries eventually. But everybody has something. Families. But like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said that it all belongs to Krishna. He's offering everything to Krishna, but not that he's leaving it behind. Not that he's saying, okay, Krishna, this wife, these children, my house, it's all yours, and I'm going to go up in the forest. That's not real renunciation. That type of renunciation is considered, what is it, mode of passion or ignorance. Because this, things are troublesome, then I give them up. That's not real renunciation. Real renunciation is that these things belong to Krishna, so I don't claim that it's mine. I don't claim that I can do whatever I want with them, but I have to take care of them on behalf of Krishna, according to Krishna's will. Whatever it is, if it's wealth, or if it's talent someone has, or beauty, intelligence, everybody has something. Bodily strength. It has to be used for Krishna. It's to be think of how to use it for Krishna. So he's the director of all sacrifice, Yajna Prati. And of course in this age the only really sacrifice is the Nam Yajna, chanting of the holy name. There's, we do other yajnas, but without chanting of the holy name they're useless. Just throwing stuff on the fire and making a ceremony, it won't have any value. But because we do that, actually Prabhupada, one place it says that the fire yajna, that's just to make a show for materialistic people. They can see that something's happening. There's a fire and things are burning up and they go, oh, if we're just offering, but Krishna says he's more pleased with nice sweets offered to the brahmana's mouth than he is with all the fancy things offered in the yajna, whatever it is. So when we have a yajna, there has to be chanting of the holy name, or ideally chanting of Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, all going on simultaneously. Without the chanting, then it's, you may attract some people and make a nice show, know all the mudras and all the different things, but it won't have any effect on the world. The Sankirtan Yoga is the real thing. Yagnar Sankirtana Prayer Yajanti Hi Sumedha Saha. Lord Chaitanya, that was a yajna, and intelligent people will join that Sankirtan Yajna. Then Prajapati, he's the leader of all the living entities. He's the father of all the Prajapati. He's the head Prajapati. There's many Prajapatis, like Daksha, that produce the population of the universe, but Krishna is all coming from Krishna. Dhyampati, the master of all intelligence. So generally, if someone has some intelligence, they become proud of it because they'll be recognized, you know, by people for whatever reason. But the really intelligent person realizes that whatever he has is coming from Krishna. Krishna is the supreme intelligence. We only have a little tiny bit. Even the most so-called intelligent person in the world, whoever that is now, right? I don't know if they have anybody picked out. They still talk about Einstein. They're keeping his brain, thinking they can study his brain, you know, the material brain, and find out how to duplicate it or download it or something. But it's empty now because it's just a processor from the super soul. So people, we have different kinds of processors. So some people's brain can process, you know, mathematics, some people can music, some people art, some people practically nothing, right? Then just like you have different kinds of computers. Some are more powerful, they can do many more things than others. So, but it takes an operator, it takes a program. So they don't understand, but Krishna is the supreme intelligence. And then Lokapati, the proprietor of all the planets. All the planets, not only just, you know, little bits. If somebody owns a big chunk of this planet, which is usually not, you know, in relation to the whole planet, it's not very much, but, you know, it's supposed to be something wonderful. But they can't keep it. You can't, at the time of death, it's gone. But Krishna owns everything, all the planets and everything on the planets and all of us, and it's quite inconceivable. But again, if we want to be the owner, as much as we want to be the owner, we want to be the controller, then we can't understand Krishna because he's the supreme owner and the supreme controller. So as much as one can give up that, then he can understand Krishna. But Krishna may give him so many things to take care of, like Yudhisthira, whole planet, entire planet and all the population, all the praja, not only the humans, but everything is his responsibility. But he didn't think, this is mine. And he could leave it. As soon as Krishna left the planet, he just immediately left it behind. And didn't see any reason to stay. He could have stayed and, you know, still been the emperor. He wasn't that old. Could have lived a long time. But he only wanted to serve Krishna. Then Dharapati, the of the earth, and the supreme Pati Gatis, the supreme head of all destinations, and also of the kings of the Yadu dynasty. I guess there was a king named Andaka, and then there was Vrishni. Krishna's in the Vrishni dynasty, right? Isn't it? It's part of the Yadu dynasty. So they had many different dynasties within the Yadu dynasty, but Vrishni was the first king. Like Kuru was the first king in the Kuru dynasty. Long, long, long ago, but they still remember him. Then Satvatam, the Yadus, and Prasiditam. Then the prayer is, be merciful to me, Krishna, who's the Lord of all the devotees also. We're fortunate that we're worshiping Krishna. And Krishna doesn't require very much except full surrender. But that just means doing what Krishna wants. And we learn that from the spiritual master. We learn from scripture. And main thing is to, of course, we have our yogi vows and initiation, four regulative principles, and chanting the holy name. Main thing is chanting the holy name, because if one is carefully chanting the holy name and sincerely, you know, begging Krishna for service, Prabhupada gave one translation. He just said it, the Maha Mantra just means, Krishna, please accept me, please accept me, please accept me. So in order to really chant that, one has to be in a very humble state of mind. Like Queen Kunti said, Tvama Kinchana Gocharam, one who's bewildered by Janma Aishwarya Shuti Shivir, trying to get those things, they can't call out with feeling to Krishna. They can chant, they can do puja, they can give charity, they can build temples, they can do many things, but it won't be with feeling. It'll be like thinking, well, everybody will see that I'm a great devotee or something. when one is really bereft of all material things. But that doesn't necessarily mean we want to be a beggar on the street, naked, but those people are generally very attached to whatever they have, more than other people. But one has to realize it's not mine. I'm not this body and all the things related to the body. It all belongs to Krishna, and then I have my duty what to do with it. Then one can have, like Prabhupada, he had so many temples, he had so much money, he had so many totally dedicated followers. One time there was a guy kind of arguing with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada looked at Brahmananda and said, see, he would do any, if I asked him to kill somebody, he would do it. You know. Of course, he would never do that. But he had such power, but he wasn't attached. He knew Krishna, it's all Krishna's. And it was all given to him by Krishna, and he just used everything. When he had nothing, he used everything for Krishna. And when he got so wealthy and so powerful, he remained the same person. He didn't start to think, now I'm so great. He took a humble, there's many, many examples. One time, Prabhupada came to New York, and you know, there were hundreds of devotees there. They all came from all around the East Coast. And he got out of the car and was going in the temple, and there was a big Jai Prabhupada kirtan. And one Mataji was carrying a little baby and wanted to go inside, and Prabhupada held the door open. He wasn't at all bewildered by all these people worshipping him. He could handle it. Gandhi had, you know, people standing out his window chanting Gandhi, 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 and he couldn't tolerate it. He wanted it to stop. The Prabhupada said he'd seen that and he would like that, but because it was when it was for Prabhupada, it meant that he could engage all these people that were so attached to him in serving Krishna. That's all he cared about. He wasn't for himself. So that's what we want to come to that. We want to work on that. So that's why we meditate on these things, you know, that Prabhupada says here, this is Sukhadev's, you know, personal realization. Krishna's in the spiritual world, and he's not concerned with all these designations of being the proprietor of the material worlds and everything. He's in Goloka, and he's with his cowherd friends. And Prabhupada, I think it's one of his godbrothers, but the German, he went to India, he was searching, and he saw so many demigod temples, and he saw they all have work to do. Each demigod has their work. But then he Krishna temple, he saw Krishna is just dancing and playing the flute. This must be this real god. You know? And even Nietzsche, that big philosopher, he said, I want to show me a god who dances. You know? That's Krishna. He's dancing, he's just enjoying. But all this work is going on by his agents, you know. He is in control of all of it, but not that he worries about it, not that he has to think about it. Like a very big man, if he has a big company, so many things are going on. Or Prabhupada said, just like I'm the controller of this movement, and Krishna is the controller of everything. So Prabhupada, he dealt with so many things, good and troublesome, and good things, bad things, even good things take so much trouble building temples. Plus all the, you know, difficulties he had, devotees falling down and wasting the money and deviating in so many ways. But he just kept going for Krishna. So, and he was meditating on Krishna in the spiritual world. So there's many goddesses of fortune. They're all manifestations of Radharani. So many people worship Lakshmi separately, especially in one Indian community. If you go in their shops, and they all have their little Lakshmi altar, and every morning before the shop opens, they're praying to Lakshmi, please bring lots of money today. And they get it, but the expression is, you can worship Krishna for money, and you get the money, but that's all you get.
you don't get Krishna. You can worship Krishna to get powerful, to get elected president, or you can worship Krishna for so many material things. But you won't get Krishna, you'll just get that. You won't. It's like it says, if you can go on chanting for millions of lifetimes, but if we maintain the offenses, we think it's okay. We may get something from the chanting, we may become a famous chanter, you know, and have everybody listening in big concerts and get paid huge money, but you won't get Krishna. We want to pray to Krishna, please accept me, make me, give me service, let me be your servant. So then the Guru, Prabhupada arranged on, you know, the whole movement. And there's quite a bit mentioned here about sex life in the mundane world. And that the lowest thing in the material world is the highest thing in the spiritual world. So, but it's a perverted reflection here. All the activities here are perverted reflections, the mundane activities. That people will think is the supreme, topmost thing. That's why it's not recommended for just anybody to worship Radha and Krishna right off, because they'll compare Radha and Krishna to ordinary couples. But they have, there's so many imitation Radha and Krishnas, although they don't think they're Radha and Krishna. So many supreme couples. I only know the American ones that are currently famous, but every country has them. But usually they're always getting divorced and they're always having difficulties. And you find their pictures all over the world in the magazine stands. You know, and people want to know how they're dressing and, you know, what their latest holiday is and, you know, what their latest, which rehabilitation center they went to. And they're fascinated by their activities. The very beautiful couples, very rich, very famous. They want Radha and Krishna. They want. They have all these superheroes. They want Krishna. They want a great personality who solves all the problems, protects everybody. But they fantasize. They just make them up or they label somebody, you know, but they don't get any satisfaction, really. And they just maybe try to imitate them. You know, dress like them. He said, like this new princess in England, who I saw one headline, she bought some dress in one shop, you know, and then immediately every dress, that dress sold out. You know, she just wore it and then, you know, she did a favor for that shop. Or she wears a dress of some designer, so then all kinds of women want to get that. They're fascinated by them. Devotees are more interested in Krishna. If we're fortunate, I remember one devotee used to come every day and start telling me how Krishna, how the deities were dressed. And it always blew my mind because I couldn't remember, but he would know all the colors and all the, how the jewelry and everything. And obviously he was quite absorbed in it. But we like to see Krishna. We like to decorate Krishna when we go and see all the jewelry in the shop, so we can think, oh, that would be nice for the deities, instead of thinking, well, that would be nice for me. When we took Radha Damodar out in public kirtan, sometimes people come and say, oh, that jewelry would be good for me. You know, I like that. That one's nice. You know. The devotees see nice things and think that they want to get it for Krishna. When we see the food market and all the beautiful fruit, we think that we should offer that to Krishna. So then that's much better. And there's no loss, because whatever we offer to Krishna, we get. So the higher consciousness is whatever we're doing, cooking, cooking for Krishna, then we get it. Instead of cooking for myself, and then I'll offer it to Krishna. That's the beginning stage. I'm cooking for my husband, I'll offer it to Krishna, then I'll give it to my husband. The higher stage is I'm cooking for Krishna, then I'll give it to my husband. It's the same reason, same, looks the same, right? So the activities of the devotee and the activities of the non-devotees, they may look exactly the same, but they're completely different. So Lord Chaitanya, he was very strict as a sannyasi, and you know, like a smart sannyasi, but at the same time he presented the gopis acting in love for Krishna as the highest thing. So the Vedas give all these different yajnas you can do to, you know, get different things. And Brahma arranged that. The Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices for Vishnu and blessed them by saying, "Be thou happy by this yajna, because the performance will bestow you everything desirable for happy living and achieving liberation. The demigods pleased by sacrifice will please you. By cooperation between men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all." But that is not the ultimate thing, but Krishna is giving that. That's like maybe one level of understanding Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita, I know one devotee wrote a nice book, which I'll give you, Understanding Bhagavad Gita, and to help people enter into it. So he's very academic, and you know, he calls like level one, level two, and level three that Krishna is presenting. You know, the high, in the beginning, it says, well, it seems like Krishna is stressing bhakti and stressing devotional service, but he doesn't say absolutely that he is. And then gradually, he starts pointing out more and more how Krishna is stressing bhakti as the highest level. But these other things are there because it's the Vedas are for everyone. Krishna is for everyone. But then Narada Muni chastised Vyas for giving all these yajnas for material gain and not putting enough stress, even though, of course, throughout the Mahabharata or whatever, there's so much mention of Krishna being the Supreme Lord. They said it wasn't enough because people get distracted by all these instructions of how to do yajnas for material gain. So we don't want to do that. Here we have many Ganesh worshippers, and I'm quite sure most of them are worshipping Ganesh for material gain, even though they're Buddhist. I think that's a unique feature of Thai Buddhism, that they worship the demigods, along with Buddha, because it was not Hindu, but a Vedic main part of it. This part of the world was a main part of the India and the time of Yudhisthira, but then gradually things, you know, India is shrinking and other things come in. So Buddhism came in, but on top of the Vedic culture, so it's mixed. Even one scholar said that Thailand is an ocean of Hinduism covered by Buddhism. You know, they all do all the king does Hindu rituals every year, so many of them. Ceremonies, and it's, you know, considered Brahman. I think they call it Brahman. Brahman, not Hindu, but Brahman. But so we need to understand, you know, more. I don't know why that thing didn't show up. Text, you know. So, any questions? Ganesh Chaturthi, which I guess was yesterday, the birthday of Lord Ganesh, is one of the most popular Indian festivals. Lord Ganesh is half man, half elephant. Elephant's head and human body. He is very enigmatic and very famous Indian demigod, Ganapati. He is the Lord of inconceivability. He wants to show people how, when you approach transcendence, when you approach God, the impossible is possible. He is delegated representative of God. He is a Vaishnava, playing a particular role on behalf of the Supreme Lord Krishna. He is a member of this material world, living side by side with everyone, especially favoring human beings. Each demigod plays an individual role in human life by maintaining the sattvika vibration, peaceful vibration, productive vibration for the human success and happiness. Ganesha is the Lord of material activities and the execution thereof. Ram Bhakti, Krishna Bhakti, is transcendental. The material world is an obstacle to transcendence. For the Bhakti Yogi, there is nothing material. There is no material world. Everything is spiritual. If we chant Hare Krishna and serve Krishna, we will automatically be peaceful because we recognize He is the owner of everything, the enjoyer of everything, the controller of everything. Bhakti has nothing to do with sattva-gun, rajagun, tamagun, which are the principle moving the whole material world. So Ganesh is playing a role in the three modes of nature, which is prakriti. He is influential on this prakriti. In Vedic rituals and rites, even of a Vaishnav, Lord Ganesh is the embodiment of wisdom and bliss. He is the Lord of thresholds, which means entrances. Above the threshold of a temple, there will be one murti of Ganapati. When the six Goswamis built the temples of Govindaji, Madan Mohan, and Gopina, above the door there was a murti of Ganesh. Just above the door, not like it's a major part of the worship. He is the Lord of entering new dimensions. Material world is only three-dimensional. Length, width, and breadth. Depth. Fourth dimension is consciousness. Length, width, and depth can only be measured in sentient, dead stuff. He takes you from the lower dimension to the higher dimension, the material dimension to the spiritual dimension. He is called Ganapati because he is the Lord of groups, Gana, groups of elements, groups of senses. Ganesh is considered the Lord of astrology. He is said to be the language of the stars and the destinies of every living being. Thus, astrologers petition to Ganesh to pen such knowledge to them. Whenever a Janam Kundali done, Om Sri Ganeshaya Namaha, for equivalence, will be written there. Ganesh has different symbols. He has one tusk and four hands, two of which hold a noose and a hook. The noose catches and frees us from illusion. It also represents attachment that can lead to anger that hurts us. The noose is also used to pull his devotees near the truth and then tie them down to the highest God. The holding of the Ankush represents the world, the symbol of divine royalty. The hook or the goad indicates that its power helps one motivate towards one's goal. His 2 feet represent the knowledge of power and knowledge of action. The elephant head is significant. This is the only form which has significance of Om. If you draw an elephant's head looking from the front on a piece of paper, you have the trunk going down and going up, and the shape of the head looks like Om. Also, elephant is very wise animal, so he is embodiment of wisdom. The significance of riding on a mouse is complete conquest to win over egoism. Sometimes he is shown holding an axe, which he uses to cut off worldly attachments. It is amazing that everybody is worshipping Ganesh. They don't know what they are getting into. Om Shri Ganeshaya Namaha. Please give us Siddhi and Riddhi. And what is this chopper for anyway? Siddhi means protection, perfection and yogic powers, and Riddhi means material opulence. Even in Japan, we went to one big hippie festival, and one of the musicians, he just played a drum, and he just chanted, Om Ganeshaya, Om Shri Ganeshaya, Om Ganeshaya, you know, like really fast and really loud for a long time. It's popular. I don't think they even know what, they're not asking for anything, they just attracted to Ganesh. You see many t-shirts and all the people like that. And for the Christians who are against deities, Ganesh is the one that most turns them against Hinduism. To see people worshipping the elephant god. And that's what they see in most Hindu temples. And then they just go, you know, this is completely crazy. Because they have no understanding. It's not the Supreme God. The other two hands, oh. So you do all this puja, and he blesses you with all kinds of wealth, which you buy all kinds of objects and possessions with and get very much attached. Thus, on one side, he's giving you all this money to get attachments, but on the other side, he's chopping off all your attachments. Very interesting. The other two hands, one is pointed in a gesture to give blessings and assuring fearlessness. The other is holding a rice ball. The hands that gives blessings shows that he can grant one's desires and assure freedom from fear. He blesses and offers protection from all obstacles on the spiritual path. The rice ball indicates sadhana, or the spiritual path of the devotees. He has a rice ball in his hand, sweet ball. Oh, you did good devotion, good sadhana. Here you can have this. What does the rice ball represent? Siddhi and riddhi. That's the perfection. What is the siddhi and riddhi? The siddhi is bhakti. The siddhi of bhakti is prema. He has a big stomach and large ears. The fat belly indicates the influence of the material manifestations is within him. His big ears represent that he accepts the truth with positive vibrations and throws out the false and non-virtuous words that men may present to him. Ganesh is then covered with red, often covered with red vermilion. This red represents the red complexion of one who is absorbed in work, which causes the intensified circulation of blood to all parts of the body. Thus it produces the red glow of the skin. He represents hard work. Ganesh is also the lord of action. He is also worshipped with red flowers. Since he works wholeheartedly, he has a strong appetite. Thus he often enjoys a steady supply of sweets and delicacies. The single tusk that he has represents the one truth, while the broken tusk indicates the imperfection of the ever-changing material world. The mouth represents the desire to enjoy material pleasures and endanger the ego. Though the mouth is small, its desire for material happiness is the driver that motivates to act on such pleasures. Hare Krishna. So there are different ways to understand. Like very few people that worship Ganesh will be understanding that the purpose is, you know, to get to Krishna, to give up everything. Same thing Shiva, he gives up everything. He doesn't have anything. Even though he has this entirely opulent planet, he doesn't have a house even. And it says he couldn't even buy his wife a Musari. You know, she has to live also completely renounced. But people worship him to get opulence. And they worship Ganesh to get opulence. But the idea is he wants them to give it all up, so he may take it away. Krishna, like Shiva, is called Asutosh. I mean, he's very easily pleased. So they don't have to do much, and he'll just say, okay, take it. Just because he's engaged in his sadhana, and he doesn't want to be bothered. So when the devotees ask him for material things, he just says, okay, just take it. He doesn't waste time. Krishna won't do that. Krishna will always try to...
He'll take away.
So people, like in Singapore, most of the Hindus are Shiva worshippers. And many of them, they don't even want a picture of Krishna. Because he's called Hari, they're afraid he's going to take away their opulence. They think Shiva's going to give them more and more. So they do all kinds of puja and they give many things. But they're afraid to even think about Krishna for fear that he's going to take it away. But he takes away what you don't need. So if somebody has a lot of opulence but they just want to use it for Krishna, he may give them much more also. It's not that every devotee of Krishna is poor, but many are voluntarily poor so they won't be distracted. But many are also very rich in history, and nowadays we see many devotees of Krishna who are actually very renounced, but they're very rich. Really, really super rich. But like Ambarish, for example, he's, I guess, the best example. But he's just, he never cared for himself as a sense gratifier. He's not into it. Of course, he has a big house and he stays in big hotels when he goes to Bombay. And, you know, the people supply him with the big cars. But that's not his meditation is how to build that temple in Mayapur. And along the way, he helped many projects for ISKCON and takes responsibility. Sometimes it's a headache for him, like the temple in Hawaii. He bought that, and since he bought it, the value has gone up and up and up and up. You know. But somehow he kept it in his name. I don't know why he did that. Krishna must have empowered him. So it's in his name. Otherwise, for sure, along the way, some temple president would have sold it, you know, because they could have mortgaged it, you know, borrowed huge money based on that property. But because it's, and he just rents it to the temple for $1 a year, so that they don't have to worry. But it's his building, his property. Other places he just gave it, you know, like Detroit, and he gave so much money so they could maintain it for many years. So that's his real meditation. He told me that he always wondered, you know, in his life how he was born in that family, because everyone in the family was just mad after making more and more business and making money, all his cousins and uncles and everybody, and he never cared for him. Yeah, he was an art collector and, you know, and things like that. But then now he realizes that, you know, and because of that name, he can do a lot of preaching. And with the money, he can build Mayapur, which, you know, Prabhupada asked him to do from the very beginning. So he tried in many ways, you know, helping different devotees, and saw they weren't getting it done. And he just took over the whole project and became completely empowered. And now it's going up so fast. So that's one example, but there's many others, especially in the Indian community, that are big, big businessmen, you know, with thousands of employees. But if you see them at the temple, they look, they're just dancing around with everyone else. If you don't know who they are, you'd never know. Never, no way. It's like one devotee from Africa went to America, where Ambarish lives. And he didn't know Ambarish. You know, Ambarish is taking the ghee lamp around for everyone. And then when he found out it was Ambarish, he just was shocked. Because, you know, used to having the guy who's so-called big, you know, has got to be served. But he's going to serve everybody in the most simple ways. So that Krishna can give more and more to people that want to use it. He can take it away if he sees it's going to inhibit our whatever we have. He'll take it away if he sees it. That's that attachment to that thing. Even though we want to get to Krishna, that attachment is holding us back. Krishna will find a way to remove it. And sometimes in very amazing ways. You know, people lose everything, but then they know, okay, there's nothing left but Krishna. Sometimes in disease or, you know, things like that that seem very bad, but it turns out to be good because we give up everything. You know, give up attachment to the body and all the things along the body, and have nothing else to look to Krishna. If we can be fortunate and, you know, catch on to the prayers of Queen Kunti, and she says, let all my... She even asked to give up attachment to her family members who were all great devotees. She thought that was holding her back. She said, let me just be like the Ganges and let everything be flowing to Krishna. So like the Ganges is flowing and nothing can stop it from getting to the ocean, no matter what dam they build or, you know, whatever happens. It's either going to go around, it's going to go over, it's going to break the dam, but it can't stop it. It can hold back for a little while, but something has to go through, and then they either have to open the dam or the dam will break, because the Ganges is going to get to the ocean. So the devotee, nothing can stop the devotee if we get really determined and we have Krishna as the goal, and everything else we're doing, you can do. You can study, you can work, you can have family, you can do everything. Understanding that the goal is to get them to everything, whatever we have, it's all to help us get to Krishna. That's the goal. That's the ultimate goal. We may have many, like you have your exam, so that's a goal you have to, you know, then it's over. But the ultimate goal of getting to Krishna is never over. The devotee, the more he gets close to Krishna, the more he thinks he's not getting to Krishna, and he tries harder. Meanwhile, he does all the other things that he has to do, whatever those things are. Okay, Ganesh Ki Jai. Tomorrow is Lalita's birthday, and then the Sunday is Radharani. So it's a good weekend. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Yajnapati Krishna Ki Jai.